Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. This is Paul Nichols, the investor coach and host of It's Your Money, the financial podcast that was designed to pull back the curtain on the financial services industry and expose the truth about money and investing. Welcome. Well, once again, my name's Paul Nichols. I hope this finds you well on this gorgeous day, wherever that may be. You might say, well, it's not a gorgeous day where I am. And I always think of something I heard an old man say in a diner one time when somebody was complaining about the weather. He said, try missing one. The guy says, what's so great about today? He said, try missing one. But anyway, I hope this finds you well. We have an abundant mindset when it comes to financial matters. And as a result, we are going to share some of those concepts and ideas with you in today's broadcast. We're going to talk a little bit about Medicare and the rising cost of that and how someone might find a couple avenues of remedy or relief in some strategy that we're going to share with you here momentarily. And I want to go over a market update as well, which is part of my normal mantra. We believe in an academic and scientific approach to investing. Investing is really not that difficult. No one knows what's going to happen in the future. And to imply or to suggest that you do in any way, shape, or form is inherently dishonest. And the reason for that is because all information is factored into the current prices of stocks and bonds and securities, and only new and unknowable information changes those pricings. All the other stuff we hear up and down is hype. It's noise, as the academics refer to it. And we're not talking about lightweights here. We're talking about people like Harry Markowitz, the father of modern portfolio theory, or Eugene Fama, who recently won the Nobel Prize in Economics. I can go on and on and on. And basically, there is a large amount of empirical research, proven research, to support the academic approach of investing, which is relatively simple. Simple logically, a little tougher emotionally because we're dealing with our life savings and so on. But simple in that we need to own equities. We need to realize it's a long-term deal. We'll always be in the market the rest of our life, even after we retire, if we're fortunate enough to have funds to invest. We realize that diversification is the key to success. Dissimilar price movement. We never know whether it's going to rain or the sun's going to shine, so we want to have suntan lotion and umbrella companies. We don't want to chase what's hot. We want to be in it all along. And then, if one would religiously, cultish, if I might imply, if they would cultishly, religiously rebalance their portfolio on a predetermined basis with predetermined targets and actuals, you will capture market returns because the market returns are there. Last year was a great example of that, 2013. Of course, 2014, ouch, starting out a little rocky. Let me go ahead and hit on that real quick. The market update here, ladies and gentlemen, the idea is in essence to touch base on some major asset classes. Now, these would not be sectors like energy and pharmaceutical and finance and manufacturing and transportation. We believe that's where you find the hype. Those are sectors. You want to invest with asset classes. That's not types of companies, but rather size companies. So you want to own large, you want to own small, you want to own growth, you want to own value. You want to own fixed investments that are short-term and highly liquid. And you want to rebalance on a regular basis. Now, these companies, small, large, value, and growth, would encompass all the international markets as well, developed and emerging. So if you have a well-diversified portfolio, it doesn't matter where the returns are, you're going to capture them. And I hope that you are well-diversified because, ladies and gentlemen, large was up last year, but that's not normally the case, and most people's portfolios are predominantly large U.S. companies, the old blue chips. When small and value have historically outperformed large and growth. So with that being said, let's do the market update and just look at the global marketplace in a snapshot as of February 3rd, business close. It's been a rocky January. February 3rd, business close. We have the Russell 2500 Index. That's looking at small to very small U.S. growth companies. And they're down year-to-date. These are all year-to-date. So after January, year-to-date, 5.3%. Small is down. When we look at small to very small growth companies in the U.S., measured by the Russell 2000 Index, were at negative almost 6. So it has been rocky so far. When we go down to the Russell 1000 value, which is large value companies, these would be large, not small, but large value, it's negative 5.7. And when we round out the U.S. snapshot here by looking at the Russell 2000 value, we have a similar story. That measures small value companies. So small across the board, value and growth are down respectively 5-ish percent, a little 6 on the value side with small. And then when we go to U.S. large, growth predominantly, value's down 5.7 and growth's down 5.7. So at this point across the board, we're right around 5 to 6% down in the domestic marketplace. This certainly is no reason for panic. It's a reason for rebalancing on a predetermined basis, not chasing the market, but capturing those market returns. And in this case, we're not capturing. We're giving some back. But if it's well-balanced, ladies and gentlemen, which I hope you are rebalancing on a regular basis or your coach is, you would have locked in a lot of gains from 2013 if you were in the market. I hope you were. Let's go look at international. The Morgan Stanley Capital International family of index, or indices, is what we're going to refer to. We'll start with the Morgan Stanley Capital International World Index. This measures market capitalization of developed markets, countries like United Kingdom, Switzerland, New Zealand, Finland, Canada, Belgium, Austria, to name a few, and right in the same neighborhood, ladies and gentlemen, about 5.4% down on the developed markets international. When we go to the Morgan Stanley Emerging Markets Index, that would be non-developed emerging markets, countries like Argentina, China, Czech Republic, Hungary, Morocco, Poland, Russia, South Africa, etc., we're looking at about 7.5%. That would be our laggard this year. And by the way, that was our laggard last year, ladies and gentlemen, was the emerging markets. But we rebalanced into it all year long. And it's going to turn. And when it does, it'll probably save us like it did in 2009. I believe we got 90% international in 2009. Most managers weren't looking at international until the end of 2009. So they didn't get the returns. Again, most of them are chasing the markets, unfortunately. So across the board, it's been rocky January so far after a stellar year last year, which was just incredible. Of course, we can attribute this in part to the quantitative easing or the tapering of the Fed's bond buying program. But at the same time, ladies and gentlemen, I have no idea what's going to happen in the market in the future. If I did, I wouldn't be sitting here right now. I'd be on the beach and I've done my trading for the morning already. But I will tell you that a lot of the hype that we're hearing, a lot of the news that we're hearing is government-related, and we don't hear much news about how well private industry has done as it relates to all the cash they have on the sidelines. They've streamlined a lot of their operations after 08. They've looked at their workforces. They've gotten more out of the workers that they've had. And the economy, I do not believe, is doing very well. I don't know that we've totally recovered from 08, in my opinion, but the government has done a job of propping it up and trying to smooth out the edges here. So I don't know that the market's going to take this terrible dip that you're hearing about in some of the prognosticators, just because when you look at the government news, it's not very promising due to the spending and all the issues we've been dealing with the last several years. However, private enterprise does look very promising, and the fact that bond prices were so low, a lot of these companies have gone and borrowed huge amounts of cash at very low, record low, historic low interest rates. I think of Verizon, $49 billion bond issue, and some of the things that they've done, and there's cash all over the place, and I don't mean little bits, I mean billions of dollars with some of these companies. So is private enterprise and entrepreneurism and the general growth of that type of industry going to offset some of the government things that are going on? I don't know. But I'm always optimistic because I'm in it for the long term. You know, people say to me, well, Paul, I'm going to retire in 5 years, man. I need to get my money out of the market. I need to go to cash, or I need to go to CDs or bonds or annuities or something. And I would simply say, if some of those things suit your overall plan, that's wonderful. But you got to look at the big picture. Ladies and gentlemen, your money needs to last until you check out, not till you just retire. I mean, that's the beginning of, when the account's not going to be added to anymore. So we want to make sure that it is hopefully growing in long-term, well-diversified, conservative portfolio. I mean, the data's in. You just got to go back and look at the last 40 years. The market has a two-thirds bias. Two out of every 3 years is up. One out of every 3 years is down. We never know which is going to be which, but we know it has a two-thirds bias. And that's definitely better than a one-third bias. So if you're in it, you're going to win two out of three times, ladies and gentlemen. And, of course, you can't look at the market at any period of time and not see promise and potential growth. I mean, you can look at a couple times in the last 100 years. The Black Monday didn't affect us a whole lot in 1987. We go back to 73, 74. Before that, we have to go all the way back to the stock market crash of 1929. Of course, 2008 would have to be lumped in the last 100 years of market downfalls, and that really is three major ones in 100 years, ladies and gentlemen. I don't think that's unreasonable when you look at how many positives there are. Now, whether you're getting market returns is a whole other question. A lot of investors that we look at when we analyze their portfolios, we just don't see them getting market returns. And what I mean by market returns is what the market would bear in any given year, and primarily because they're spending so much chasing the market, i.e. not them directly, but their advisors or the mutual fund manager, that the costs are eroding what returns they do pick up. So enough said. Let me get off that because I sound like I'm starting to go on a huge crank there. Let me jump over to one item I'm going to share with you, and then we'll call it a day. Medicare. I am learning, and constantly learning, as I hope you are, that as we look at our retirement plan, we look at our overall insurance planning and retirement planning, our investments, and we look at our overall holistic approach to our clients' needs, one of the things that we've always taken into consideration seriously is the potential for health care as we age. Now, we've always done that predominantly by looking at the major issue that most would have, and that is a potential long-term care need. Because when you look at a couple between the husband and wife, the chances that one of them is going to need care is extremely high. It is the most used insurance of all those insurances that people own, long-term care insurance, auto, home, health, etc. However, what we're finding, and a lot of people don't realize this, is we have to look more seriously when we're doing a lot of our planning for income, for retirement, and et cetera, through investments and insurance and whatever vehicles we're using, because of the way Medicare is set up. Now, many of you know this already, but Medicare is a means-tested program, which means that higher-income retirees are going to pay more for example, Medicare Part B, which covers the doctor visits and outpatient services, as well as for Part D, the prescription part. And, for example, a higher-income couple could pay as much as $671 a month for a Medicare supplement plan versus a middle-income couple who pay about $209. So now, what's the interesting thing about that? Well, here's the thing. Because Medicare Part B premiums have been going up twice the rate of Social Security cost of living increases, we expect that premiums are going to continue to rise, and there's going to be a larger deficit in people's budgets toward this. So whether you're middle income or otherwise, it goes back to what's the end game and what's our sources of income. How might one alleviate this? Well, if you're in your 40s and 50s and heading toward retirement and have more time, you can look at a couple things that will really help. One is funding Roth accounts. So that when you do pull some of your income out later in the years, you can be more tax bracket conscious. For example, let's say I need a certain amount, $75,000 a year, but at 72, I go from one tax bracket to the next. Well, then I could take a few thousand out of my Roth that year and stay in the lower tax bracket. So Roth contributions can help with your means-tested income for programs like Medicare later. The other thing that, for example, my wife and I are doing and have done for several years now is we're using health savings accounts. Now, depends on whether your employer offers these or you can get them outside or whatever your situation is, but health savings accounts are really a high-deductible health plan. So rather than paying large deductibles, as I've done for many years, we looked at lowering the deductible or lowering the premium. Let me back up. Rather than paying high premiums year after year, we went with what's called a catastrophic plan, one that has a higher deductible. Out-of-pocket expenses would be a little higher if it happened. The deductible would be higher. But whatever the deductible is, we're allowed to put in a tax-deferred account, and it would never be taxed if, in fact, we use it for any medical expenses. And this would be one. We can use it currently. You can use it for things like long-term care insurance and chiropractors, even acupuncture and other perhaps alternative forms of medicine. So there's two ways that you can be proactive about lowering your potential Medicaid bills moving forward, the Part Bs that a couple would pay for, by trying to be mindful of the harvest on their accounts when they start to pull the money out and the taxation related to that. So, you know, this should be part of the question when you're looking at, should I fund a Roth or a traditional IRA? And the other part is, if you have the ability to go out and look at a health savings account, it could save you a tremendous amount of money, not only in taxes, on both sides, because you can write that contribution off to that HSA in the given year, and then it would be tax-free on the other end, and you can use it for some of this stuff. And actually, you can take these accounts and put them in the market, or there's companies out there that deal with that you can keep it in investments and let it grow as well. So for those of you that may have concerns about Medicare and the cost moving forward, boy, if we can get with people 5-10 years before that threshold comes upon them, we can really get creative and do some pretty cool things. So if you're not looking at that and thinking about it, I encourage you to check it out. With that being said, let me sign off. This is Paul Nichols, the president of Financial Abundance. Financial Abundance is a registered investment advisory firm located in Happy Valley, that's State College, Pennsylvania. If you would like to check out our website, we are at FAI Coach, FAICoach.com. There's all kinds of videos and there's content on there. You can check out blogs, etc., that type of thing. And whether you're local or out of the state of Pennsylvania, if you'd like to learn more about investments, retirement planning, insurance, and the overall academic approach to investing, and how prudence is the key when we look at investing. But a lot of people are creating wealth transfers unknowingly and unnecessarily based on the rules and some of the understanding that they have about money. So, for those of you listening, I encourage you to continue. Hopefully you pick up a nugget here or there. Our intent in doing this podcast is to enrich you, the listeners' lives. If you'd like to learn more about what we do, check out our website, or you can give our office a call, 866-867-5745. This is Paul Nichols, the host of It's Your Money, signing off, wishing you a great day. Have a great day.